this is finally going to be the decade of Indian brands going global. I'm very passionate about this, right? Because if you think about us as Indian consumers, for many years, we've been consuming products from multinational companies, and there have been very few Indian homegrown products that have really made a mark overseas. And I think with logistics, supply chains getting simpler and simpler, you know, D2C brands getting more and more smarter with their product innovation as well as their marketing techniques and getting scale, I think one of the big trends that's going to happen this year is you're going to see a lot of Indian brands on global shelves.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Direct to a Billion Consumers. My name is Arjun Vaidya and I'm your host. Today I'm very excited to have Akshay Gulati with me. He's a good friend and currently serves as co-founder and CEO of ShipRocket. We're all enthused by the D2C space, but I have to say logistics is the real engine of D2C world over. Fresh off a very large fundraise, I'm very excited to have him on the podcast. Thanks so much for taking out the time, Akshay.
Thanks, Arjun. It's a pleasure to be here. And hello to all the listeners. And really excited to speak with you today.
So, Akshay, you know, I always like to get into the journey of a person first, right? You have a textbook CV, graduate from Wharton, MBA from Harvard, industry experience in Amazon, A.T. Kearney, even as an investor at Parthenon. Tell us about that part of the journey before the startup bug hit you.
Absolutely. I think that part of the journey, Arjun, was very textbook right from the very beginning, right? I was one of those kids who was a nerdy guy, good student in school, always wanted to, you know, kind of be top of the class. And I think my initial journey, pretty much, it was just a reflection of that. Very interested in finance and in building companies from a very early age. I come from a family of entrepreneurs. My dad is a first generation entrepreneur. My grandfather was from the army. So I was very keen to, you know, really learn about how you build things. And I think that's how I got interested in going to the US. I felt that education there was a little bit more hands-on, more experiential, and chose to do finance. One, honestly, I was not very good in engineering, so I did science with eco in school, wasn't very good at the science part. I went to Wharton for a dual degree as well, and finally just ended up doing a dual concentration in finance and real estate. It was a phenomenal experience. Obviously, you got to meet people from all walks of life, from all over the world, and it kind of opened up my eyes into what I could truly achieve. I tried a bunch of different things there. I did an internship in sales and trading. I did an internship in wealth management. But honestly, to date, if you ask me, my true calling that I found in Wharton was consulting. I loved strategy consulting. And even today, it's one of my favorite, you know, things to do. And it's a large part of what I do today at ShipRocket. So the wheel has almost come full circle. I started in strategy consulting in 2004. And now in 2022, 18 years later, I'm back doing a similar role within ShipRocket now. And I just loved the idea that you could go dissect businesses, figure out what was going on and find ways to help make them better. And A.T. Kearney was a phenomenal opportunity. I got to work with some of the senior business leaders in the country, learned a lot from them, learned a lot from my colleagues there. And those 2.5 years there before I went to HBS were actually a dream. Really enjoyed it. Harvard was, again, a lifelong ambition, right? So I'm one of those people who when I was 15 years old or 14 years old, my dad had said, you know, I never got to study because my grandfather died when my dad was very young. And he said, I really want my son to have the best education possible. And it's my dream that you go to Wharton and Harvard. And I'm lucky that I was able to kind of realize that dream from him. So I was very driven to get there. And Harvard, in many ways, was a life-changing experience. I think the journey started with Kearney and Wharton, but Harvard was the real inflection point of my life. I was lucky I got there on my own merit, got a scholarship, and just the people I met, the exposure I got, completely opened up my eyes. And that's really where I realized I wanted to be an entrepreneur. The seeds of it were there from the very beginning, but the desire was always there, but how I was going to do it was never really that clear to me. And Harvard really made that possible, all the people I met there. Went back to consulting after that to Parthenon, just because it was a 2008-09 recession when I graduated, and probably not the best time to start a business as an entrepreneur when people are struggling to, you know, kind of keep the roofs on their head. So went back, paid off part of my student loan, and the moment that was there and I was debt free, I came back and took the journey into entrepreneurship. Initially did a bunch of things with my father, with my mentor in India, who I found out through that journey. My dad and I invested in a stock exchange in India, and I helped set that up. That was my first taste of, you know, setting up businesses in India from scratch. And then I joined the Smile Group, a gentleman called Harish Behel, who was at that time the poster child of e-commerce. And he taught me a lot in that year. Unfortunately, it was not the real best year to do new businesses. And one of the things I truly realized is, that I didn't really have any operational experience, right? I had a consultant, and as an incubation head for Smile, I was always telling people what to do without actually having done a lot of it myself. And that was the time I truly realized I wanted to get some deep operational experience. And e-commerce and retail had been a very integral part of my journey, even at E.T. Kearney in 2004. Most of my work had been in helping the Indian business houses set up organized retail operations, whether it was Reliance, whether it was Aditya Birla with the more supermarkets, whether it was a bunch of Indian business houses who were getting into niches and verticalized e-commerce. Offline retail is what I should say, in 2004. And the journey into e-commerce was seamless that way, right? It was just the next evolution. And that's how I joined Smile, worked in a bunch of products that they had, like Fashion & You, and helped kind of, you know, fix the unit economics of those businesses. And then when I really realized that I wanted to get operational experience, Amazon was absolutely the right fit because they were the best e-commerce player in the market. I figured no better place to learn how to run that business than from the best. And I went to London and joined Amazon in the UK as a product manager.
And look, I think what you said, right, about your experience in the US as well, I had a similar journey. My dad eventually didn't go to do his MBA in the US. And so even though I've not done my MBA, I went to Brown for my undergrad, and that was life-changing experience for me as well. But Akshay, you know, you talked about Amazon, right? And that's a company I have a lot of respect for. You worked at different roles at Amazon, from being a product manager to leading financial and operations, performance management, business development, strategic projects. Tell us about your learnings from Amazon as you saw this amazing company's entire product and logistics chain in e-commerce from up close.
Absolutely, Arjun. And it was like doing a second MBA, right? So while Harvard opened my mind up and taught me about how to do things, when we specifically talk about e-commerce, Amazon was like another MBA for me. Right from the day I joined in as a product manager running video games and software. And again, I've been very fortunate that each of those roles at Amazon came in at a time, and I changed about three roles in 3 years there. They were offered to me, which were all very important initiatives that came in. So for example, video games and software, I was just plain lucky. I got into that category the year that PS5 and Xbox One came out. So that category had pretty much been dead for about 10 years because nothing had happened after PS4 and Xbox 360. And the year I got into the category, there were these two big launches coming. So I got to really understand the Amazon DNA from the ground up, right? Whether it's the customer first, whether the customer is always right, and how you operationalize those principles and those values into actually day-to-day operations. Because while it seems great to say all of these things, it's very hard to actually make them work on a day-to-day basis because it leads to a lot of financial burden, number one. And number two, there are decisions that you have to take which intuitively might seem wrong in the short term. But what you have to learn, and what I learned in my journey there, is that these decisions are absolutely right in the long term. So my initial role there as a product manager, I got to do a lot of work around pricing, around product marketing, around negotiating with vendors, along with the vendor managers that we had, around figuring out the selection that we put out to our consumers. And it really taught me the bare bones of understanding consumer behavior and really understanding, you know, like, for example, on a video games page on Amazon, which product you put where, what are consumers most likely to want to buy if they've added, for example, a PS5 in their cart, you know, which are the hot selling products, not just from a conversion perspective, but also from a customer demand perspective. How do you work with your vendor managers to actually make sure you have stock and do demand planning so that you have stock when other people are out of stock? It was a great role. I had a great team of colleagues. I still remember them very, very fondly. We were a team of about 6 people who worked in this category. And during this, you know, I got to work with some of the senior folks at Amazon as well. And I was able to, I guess, impress them with my go-to attitude. And they gave me the opportunity to take it to phase 2. It was a new project that we'd started there called Trade-In, where people could actually sell their used video games, DVDs, and books and video games being a large part of that, to Amazon and get Amazon credit to buy new products. And it was, you know, an integral part of the flywheel that Amazon calls, so that, you know, you've bought something from us rather than sell it to a used store on the high street or sell it C2C on some platform. We actually used to take it back so that you get Amazon credit and then you continue buying and spending that money on Amazon. It was a very important part of the flywheel and keeping that going. And I got the opportunity to kind of lead the trade-in business because it had some relevance also to the category I'd been working in, which was video games and software. And the cool thing about this business was that we got to set up everything from scratch. So while video games and software is a category that had been at Amazon for many years, and it was really about this new launch of PS5 and Xbox One and how you become a market leader in that segment, but trade-in was a completely different business. It was like, for example, we had to set up our own warehouses from scratch just because, you know, the Amazon warehouses in the UK were not used to dealing with processes around buying used goods. So when a used good comes into your warehouse, you actually have to do something called grading. So in grading, you actually have to test or figure out the quality of that used good. And the Amazon warehouses or supply chain just wasn't geared to that. So we had to set up our own warehouses and we worked with third-party partners to do that and, you know, kind of build that business up to a certain scale from a very early stage. And then we had equivalent businesses in France and Germany as well. And I used to work very closely with that pan-European team. And very quickly, I had kind of realized that this was a pretty inefficient operation because tax-wise, operations-wise, it was best to centralize all three countries out of one location rather than doing it separately. And came up with a proposal to my country head of Amazon UK that, you know, we should kind of streamline all of these operations into one. And we decided to get it based out of Luxembourg. And for that, I actually got an award called the Just Do It Award at Amazon. I think it was in 2014, because very few people actually take the initiative to kind of go above and beyond their role, right? Which is not so much about growing trade-in in the UK, but figuring out how it can be a significant contributor to value for the entire company. And I was recognized for that. And again, that is the other thing I loved about Amazon, right? Is about recognition and about getting people always motivated to do their best. And you hear a lot of different stories about Amazon in the media, about how it's a tough place to work. And no doubt, it is a tough place to work. But I think the culture that they've built really rewards meritocracy. And for me, that is a very important learning. And there are a lot of things that, you know, I would do better in terms of culture there if I could. But the meritocracy part of it was very, very important because everyone there was motivated to do their best every day. And I think at that scale, to be able to do that is truly phenomenal. And, you know, at the end of it, because I got that huge opportunity and recognition, I actually transferred into something called Pan-Europe FBA, which was one of the poster child projects of the UK business. And I kind of thought that would be a job that I would definitely do for a few years. But, you know, I was leading the FBA business across EU5, which basically meant that it's not that I was leading each and every country, but we were enabling all merchants who were selling in the UK to actually list their products across all the EU5 countries. The primary goal behind it being that we wanted to increase selection of products across the EU, not just in UK and Germany, which tended to be the largest markets and marketplaces for Amazon there. And again, great experience. You know, for me, that part of it, I thought I would be in the UK for some time and I really loved my role at Amazon. But it was a point where, you know, I had that experience and the startup bug, which kind of bit me in HBS, the economy globally was recovering. I really thought that, you know, I wanted to do something on my own. And I used to hear all these stories about, you know, Flipkart and Snapdeal and all these platforms in India really doing great. And one of the platforms I used to love was Etsy in the US. And I used to always buy from them and kind of started working almost at a similar time as I took on the Pan-Europe FBA roles. My mind started kind of figuring out how I could bring Etsy to India. And I started making trips back here. And that's when I met Sahil, met Gautam and the team, and, you know, really enjoyed meeting them, decided I would come in here, you know, work in a really young startup at a very early stage, which would give me a good platform to kind of build my dream. And it's been happenstance. And I've been very fortunate that, you know, our dreams and plans as founders here have converged and ShipRocket is a result of that.
And I wanted to sort of, like, you ended that with something really interesting, right? You left a role at Amazon, came back to what at that time wasn't a very large startup. You came on to ShipRocket as CBO. And the world of e-commerce was very different then. So tell us about your thoughts about getting into this space. It definitely wasn't the most sexy space at that time. And did you actually expect things to move so fast?
So I think, you know, again, Arjun, it's been a roller coaster for us, right? So it definitely wasn't a sexy space. And what Sahil, Gautam, Vishesh and I started in 2016 when I joined was actually in the B2C space. And it was actually building Etsy in India. It was a company called Craftly. We weren't really successful at doing it, but I came into India really thinking that, you know, I wanted to build a supply chain for artists and artisans, which today the supply chain for that in India is very fragmented and very inefficient. The end producer or the manufacturer of the goods the creator, as we like to call them, don't really get paid their fair share. And it's the intermediaries along the supply chain who make a lot of the money. And that continues to be my belief even today. But we started a company called Craftly, which was a B2C portal, and it wasn't very successful. I think partly probably our execution failures, partly the market, it was just a bit too early. And we actually pivoted from there into ShipRocket. And absolutely, you're right. Logistics aggregation, as we started out, isn't really a very sexy space. And I would be lying to you if I didn't tell you that I didn't have my doubts about what my role was going to be here, because I've always been in the B2C space. I've loved retail, I've loved e-commerce. But that's where I give, you know, a lot of credit to the people you work with in a startup. I think 90% of the success of a startup is not the idea, it's the execution. And the execution happens by the people who are there. And at least at ShipRocket, the entire team, especially my three co-founders, have really been, you know, a source of inspiration. I learn from them every day. They help me become a better person. And I think it was, in that case, very much Sahil and Destiny, which kind of got me to stick on with ShipRocket and, you know, made me understand a business that I was not very keen on. If you'd asked me 6 years ago in 2016, would you be running a logistics business? I would say, no way, that's not what I want to do with my life. And the great part is that even though when we pivoted into ShipRocket, and it essentially was the same ethos as Craftly, right? What Craftly was doing was disrupting traditional supply chains and ways of selling to enable small sellers, and that we were focused on artists and craftsmen. But in ShipRocket, we've been focused on the SME segment at Bigfoot Retail for about 10 years. Sahil and Gautam have been on this journey for a very long time. The supply chain disruption was very similar, and the tech and the backend we built just kind of got further innovated and enhanced. And that's how we pivoted into ShipRocket. And today, if you ask me, I look at the last 5 years, I can't imagine how I'd be doing anything else, right? And I'm sure it's with you as well, Arjun. When you start Dr. Vaidya as an idea, and then you see all that success and you see all the difference you're making in people's lives, you sometimes think, how could you be doing anything else? And for me, that was very true. And I think the last 5 years of ShipRocket have actually taught me how sexy this business can be, because you can make a true impact. You can really help set up a lot of businesses. You're a backbone of for logistics for so many of the D2C brands that have been set up in India have first come on ShipRocket, and many of them continue to stay on ShipRocket as well. And for me, that's been a life-changing experience. And I think this is just the start of the journey. Whilst last 5 years, we hit a low when we had to shut down Craftly, and then we've hit a high with the last round of fundraising. But I think this roller coaster is just in its first phase. We have many more exciting twists and turns ahead.
Absolutely. And look, I think the impact that you talk about, right, is what's really exciting, because you're enabling so many small sellers across the country to really achieve their dreams. And I can say that we were small sellers as well, as like 40, 50 orders a day when we came to ShipRocket, and then eventually together reached the scale of more than 5,000 orders a day. And I remember there was a day we even dispatched 11,000 orders during COVID. And I remember even making that call to you during that time period. So I want to talk about the impact part, right? Look, ShipRocket is one of the fastest growing e-commerce solutions companies in the country, but you're targeting SMBs, right? And by nature, it's targeted at sort of low trust, micro transaction economy. Brand owners like me are never happy. We're always complaining. So can you tell us about the challenges you face day to day with delayed orders, execution, angry customers, and how you manage all of this seamlessly?
No, absolutely, Arjun. And honestly, our customers, and this sounds cliched, but it's true, right? The conversations I had with you and Trisha over the many years that we worked together taught me how to make my platform a lot better. Because all people care about as D2C brand owners or even SMEs, they care about their customers being happy at the end of the day. You are doing everything in your power to make sure that you have a happy customer. And ShipRocket is a very integral part of that happiness, because one of the factors that leads to customer satisfaction is how quickly an order gets there and how seamlessly an order gets there. Does it get delivered in the first attempt, or does the customer get a message around a non-delivery and then they have to call the courier company or call ShipRocket, and that creates angst which should not be there. And for us, the learning has been very, very exponential. So when we first started out, for us, you know, it was all about disrupting the existing supply chain, the existing 3PLs in terms of customer experience. That's always been the core of what we've done, because that's the reason we exist. Otherwise, you know, any SME should be able to go to a 3PL directly and work with them. But 3PL companies, which is basically courier companies, are essentially logistics companies, right? Their core is all about freight optimization, supply chain optimization, capacity utilization. Whereas at ShipRocket, our core is all about how do we create a better customer experience for e-commerce using technology. So again, we're very complementary to each other. And that's why we've had our 3PL partners be a very strong partners for us in this journey. And what we do essentially is that, you know, and it's been a journey for us as well. I would be lying to you if I said that we got it right all the time. There have been times that we've made plenty of mistakes. And it's our customers who really teach us and have taught us the flaws in our process right from the first day. So we have a very strong feedback mechanism. So when COVID happened, for example, and I clearly remember those days when the first wave happened, we went into a lockdown sometime in April 2020, and shipping of non-essential goods finally started in May 2020 or maybe mid-April 2020. And you and I were working very closely to figure out how we would get products to customers. I think ChipRocket, one of the biggest learnings I had in my journey here was during that time is that when COVID first wave happened, we just really weren't prepared for the scale at which orders and e-commerce would come back and how quickly it would come back. So May, April were quiet months for us. And we didn't really invest in scale because at that point it was all about survival. But come June, July, August, e-commerce came back with such a bang because there was so much latent demand in the system. And at that point, I think our systems essentially broke a lot in those 3 months. And that taught me a lot because that was the point that I used to wake up and I used to have 100 messages in my LinkedIn and I was just trying to figure out what happened with each and every one of those cases. And we are very customer focused that way. So if people reach out to us or reach out through our teams, we get escalations. You know, we try to make sure we figure out, one, provide a resolution to the customer, and number two, figure out how we can fix this for good. That wasn't always the case. A lot of times we were working tactically on figuring out problems and we were not making strategic changes to our supply chain or our processes. And I think that's where we've learned a lot in the last 3 years is that each and every instance or use case that comes in should be making your overall supply chain better for the long term, not just for the short term. It's not about fixing the problem today. It's fixing the problem for good. And that COVID period really taught us about investing in fixing the problem for good. Because when you're a small startup, honestly, you just don't have that money, capital or resources to be able to invest for the real long term. And I think that is what really changed our mind, that if we got through that first phase, then, you know, the company was really strong and we could really become much stronger going forward. So for example, I'll give you a specific example of something that really, you know, it was one conversation that really opened up my eyes. And I think this was Arjun with a friend that you had recommended to me. He was also into Ayurvedic products and was selling on Amazon. I forget his name now, so apologies for that. But I spoke to him around July 2020. And, you know, we were talking about our processes and our systems and what happens when products get lost. And I was telling him that, you know, when products get lost, basically we have arrangement where we up to 5,000 rupees, we basically reimburse you for that product and that's how many days it takes, etc. And he said, okay, and what about the shipping cost? And I was like, you know, we don't really reimburse the shipping cost because we have to pay that to the 3PL partner. And his answer is, but my product, you picked up my product, it did not get delivered, you lost it, and you're going to charge me a shipping cost. And honestly, I felt like the biggest fool during that call because he was right. What I was telling him was complete nonsense. And that one call made me change our entire SOP process within ShipRocket, where we then started refunding the shipping cost. Because same thing, right? You created so much angst for the customer, you lost their product. And yes, you've given them the money back for their product, but what are you going to achieve by keeping the shipping cost? The answer is we just hadn't thought of it. Because, you know, that's how it works in the logistics industry. It's always worked. And we kind of copied that. And that was one of the very insightful conversations I had. And it's, trust me, I have not kind of scripted this to say this today. I had not even thought about saying this today. It just happened when you asked me this question. And it just happens that you had introduced me to this person. And it changed our SOPs for good in the company. And I think that's, again, it's a learning experience, right? You can talk and you can learn a lot from each and every interaction you have with a customer.
I think that's our job as startup founders as well, right? To disrupt the status quo and really solve those problems. And sometimes it may seem so simple, but really it makes sense. But you know, actually, you talked about a very important thing, right? You talked about scale. And scale is a double-edged sword, right? When things hyperscale, things also break. So talk to us about how you manage things breaking in such an ops-heavy business.
Arjun, I think, you know, you just have to be ready for that. I think even today, even at the scale that we are at today, things keep on breaking and they will continue to break. And I think what the best way to manage this is, one, to invest in talent, if you really ask me. I think that has been one of our biggest learnings and our biggest mantras that we've now stick to is that you have the right person doing the right job, right? And it's not about the number of people. It's about having the right person doing the right job. And that when you hyperscale and things break, you will be able to minimize the impact or the loss you take as a result of that, both in terms of money as well as customer trust. And growing pains have been a part of our journey at ChipRocket now for the last 3 years, and COVID just changed everything, right? The trajectory of D2C, e-commerce just changed in India for good. And we were not ready for it. I don't think anybody was. And I think during that period, the one thing that really helped us stand head and shoulders above the other partners was that, you know, we had the scale, we had the people, and we invested very quickly in getting people where we were not, where it just wasn't there. For example, pre-COVID, my contact center was about 40 people. And it was being run in-house and one outsourced partner just to be able to manage the overflow. And in July, we switched to one of the largest contact center companies based out of NCR. And we started with a contact center of 120 people. And the only reason we were able to do this is because my customer service head was scaled, had come from, you know, a company where he had learned all of these things. He knew how to do it. And he was able to implement this in a span of 45 days. And if Akshay had tried to do it, and I was leading all customer operations at that point, it would have taken me 3 to 4 months to figure out how to do it. And that's why I really believe that, you know, when you hyperscale, having good people, having experienced people, having the right fit in terms of culture and customer centricity, I think that's really important. If you build a good team and a good culture, hyperscale might break things, but it's not going to break things for good. I mean, eventually things will always break as you grow very, very quickly, but you'll be able to manage that in a very effective way. And that's been my core learning. And this one experience I tell you, and that person still manages our customer operations today, right from a scale of a million orders that we were, million shipments we were doing every month, to over 7 million now. That person has scaled along with us. So while that person was hired at that scale, he's still managing the entire ecosystem for us in terms of customer operations. And I think that's a very important part of how you prevent things from breaking for good.
And 7 million shipments, just thinking about it, like 5 years ago, who would have thought that 7 million shipments would happen through D2C in India? But, you know, I wanted to segue from scale to forward, right? Looking into the future. So going forward, ShipRocket is much more than a logistics aggregator, right? It's building an ecosystem of partnership with multiple integrations across the D2C ecosystem. Tell us about the future of the company and where sort of D2C enablement is going.
No, absolutely, Arjun. I think D2C is really the future of how e-commerce is going to happen, right? So the marketplaces changed how retail happened in India, right? With Amazon and Flipkart, they really got people online. And I think today the D2C sector is allowing, while the marketplaces gave us access in the early 2000s, right? In 2007, going on till 2015, it was all about getting access to products getting delivered to your home. What D2C is doing is it's allowing us to get selection of products. It's about allowing us to get the right product for our needs. It's not about going online and buying a mass market shampoo, for example, just because that's what's available in the store and on the platforms. It's about buying the right shampoo for your hair type. Today, if I want to buy a shampoo, I have, for my hair type, I probably have 20 options. 5 years ago, I had 3 options. And that is what D2C is doing, right? It's giving us an opportunity as an Indian consumer to have access to a selection of products just that was never there in the past. And it's allowing entrepreneurs to build really focused companies as well. So 10 years ago, when you thought about a retail company, everyone said without scale, you'll never be able to absorb the brand cost. You'll never be able to get the distribution offline that you need to get your company to any sort of scale. And e-commerce and the growth of internet penetration in India has just changed that rule on its head, right? Today, you don't need 500,000 orders a month to be able to build a good D2C brand. You can build a good D2C brand with 10,000 orders a month. And that just wasn't possible about 5 years ago. And I think that's the really exciting part. And that's the future of D2C. We're going to see a lot of brands come out in niches that we never even knew existed. We'll find products that we never even knew we wanted. And when they come, it seems just a no-brainer, right? Why didn't we have the option of buying this product earlier? And that's how D2C is going to grow exponentially. And people like us are very important in helping entrepreneurs scale, especially in the initial stages, but definitely when they reach scale. Because when I talk to D2C entrepreneurs, and what they're most passionate about is only two things in every conversation, I think without exception, I found one, they're passionate about their product, right? What they create, what they sell. They are extremely passionate about it. You speak to a D2C entrepreneur and they will talk for hours about their product. And then the second thing they're extremely passionate about are their customers, right? Which is about how, you know, what the customer needs are, because that in to a very large extent influences the decision on the products that they're going to sell and how they want to deliver a great customer experience. Very seldom do they talk about all the dots in between. They know that to deliver a great customer experience, they need entire ecosystem to work with them. And And today you can do that because you have enablers like ShipRocket, you have enablers like Shopify, you have enablers like LaserPay. All of us are there to help provide a seamless plug and play experience to help you take a website online or help you take your business online. And I think these partners are a very important part of now a D2C entrepreneur's journey because one, they don't have to spend a lot of capital on building an online business, and all the capital they do spend can go into product innovation, because at the end of the day, the only thing that keeps you alive is how good your product is. I don't care how good of a supply chain you have or how good of an experience you have. If the product is not good, you're not going to be able to get a repeat customer. And that's the only way your online business is going to succeed. It's not just on new customer acquisitions. You have to build repeat. And that's where, you know, ShipRocket today is really building this entire ecosystem. And we're partnering with all our contemporaries, all new technology companies which are helping D2C brands to be able to create an ecosystem, a one kind of one-stop shop almost for D2C founders to really create their and build their business online. Whether it's partnering with people like Razorpay for the payment gateway, whether it's partnering with Shopify for the shopping cart, whether it's companies like Wixo, which we've just invested a majority stake in, who help in that entire repeat part of the business, right? It's all about on-site conversion. Once someone comes to your website, how do you increase their conversion into a paying customer? How do you basically market to that customer again and again in a personalized and targeted way to help increase repeat? You know, Wixo is a very important part of helping D2C brands overcome some of their hyperscale growing pains, which is going to be about how do you make customers loyal customers. So we invested in that company last year because we believe that's an important problem that needs to be solved. And for us, the way forward is very much around this entire piece, right? It's about solving the problems that the D2C brands have, building an ecosystem, whether we do it through commercial partnerships, strategic partnerships, or investments. We want to build that entire ecosystem that any D2C brand can come to ShipRocket and get basically solve, if not 100%, at least 90% of their problems on one platform. And that's really going to be the future of what we're trying to build. We're trying to build ShipRocket today, started off as a logistics platform, logistics aggregation platform in 2017. Today, we're much more than that, right? We are an ecosystem for e-commerce enablement. And that kind of translates into our vision. And going forward, we also want to be an ecosystem of trust and simplicity for e-commerce, right? That we're able to, if there are any customers online who have issues around trust, around whether products is going to get to them, what happens if the product is broken or the product is fake. We want to build that ecosystem of trust as well along with our partners, that, you know, the way you buy from a large marketplace, you have that trust that if anything goes wrong, they have your back. Essentially, we want ShipRocket to have your back as a consumer of D2C in India.
I love that line. We want ShipRocket to have your back as a consumer of D2C. And last question, Akshay, since you see D2C so closely, everyone's talking about the decade of D2C, right? Now, if you move outside of the enablement ecosystem, you talked about niches as one trend, but what's the big trends you see happening for D2C brands going forward?
One of the big trends, Arjun, that I think is going to happen is that this is finally going to be the decade of Indian brands going global. I'm very passionate about this, right? Because if you think about us as Indian consumers, for many years, we've been consuming products from multinational companies, and there have been very few Indian homegrown products that have really made a mark overseas. And I think with logistics, supply chains getting simpler and simpler, you know, D2C brands getting more and more smarter with their product innovation, as well as their marketing techniques and getting scale. I think one of the big trends that's going to happen this year is you're going to see a lot of Indian brands on global shelves, whether that could be regional, whether it's Southeast Asia or Middle East, it could even be truly global, going to North America, going to LATAM. A lot of Indian brands are now going to be targeting global consumers and are going to see the sort of scale that only people like Unilever and ITC, etc. in the past have seen. And for that purpose, again, we very much believe in this space. So we've launched a product called ShipRocket X, and this is my only plug in this entire show, which allows, you know, D2C brands as well as any SME to ship overseas across 20 plus countries right now and going up to 100 plus countries in the next few months. And we've invested in this platform today because we believe that the next few years, this demand is pretty small right now, but it's going to grow exponentially. It's not just going to be about Indian exporters selling artificial jewelry or selling, you know, Ayurvedic products or handmade products. It's going to be about Indian brands selling globally. And I think as a lot of D2C brands see scale in India, they're going to start looking at least adjacent markets regionally. regionally, if not global markets. And that's an area that we're heavily investing in. And the other area which, you know, is going to really define D2C in the coming decade is quick commerce. It's about getting your product quicker and faster to your house. If you ask me today, will you get e-commerce product in 15 minutes in your house? I'm not sure. I definitely, grocery and pharmacy is something that you'll get within 10 to 15 minutes. But even getting, you know, a t-shirt that you order online or a shampoo that you order online from a D2C brand, if you can get it same day, it's a game changer, because today it's anywhere from 24 to 72 hours, depending on where you live. And that is one of our missions at ShipRocket as well. And we're building the entire supply chain for that, is to be able to enable same day and next day delivery for a majority of shipments that go through the platform. And I think these are two very big trends for this decade of the 20s that we're going to see. And it's really going to redefine D2C, because the marketplaces are going to go down this route. And it's now the challenge up to people like ShipRocket, our partners, as well as the D2C founders, to make sure that this time it's not about following the trend. It's about partnering with the trend. And hopefully in future, it's about, you know, building the trend together. And in future, it's going to be about creating trends.
So the big two trends for all of you guys listening, and I totally agree, Indian brands going global and quick fulfillment or quick commerce coming across categories. Akshay, before we end this conversation, we have a tradition on this podcast. We do a rapid fire round. So the only rule is you have to tell me the first thing that comes to your mind when I say the following.
Sure.
What's your favorite brand?
Ralph Lauren.
One aspect of entrepreneurship or being a founder you don't enjoy?
Dealing with all the administrative stuff.
What's the app you spend the most time on?
Amazon.
One bucket list item you'd like to tick off?
Want to go to Cuba.
What's the first brand you look for at a grocery store?
Sparkling water brands. There are a lot of them that are coming up. So there's Boca. There is Boca I buy a lot of. There's Himalayan. I'm a big fan of sparkling water. So the moment I enter a store, that's what I look for.
WhatsApp or email?
WhatsApp.
Marketplaces or D2C websites?
D2C websites.
And the last question, do you return orders from D2C brands?
Very seldom. And that's why I'll caveat, I spend a lot of time on Amazon reading reviews. I think one of the biggest challenges that we have in the D2C ecosystem in India is that if you've not heard of a product before, you don't know much about it, right? So the great part that Amazon's built is this review engine that's there for products that come in. I buy D2C brands that, you know, people probably have never even heard of, because it's a passion for me to try and explore new products. I'm sitting in a room today which has speakers from four different Indian brands that I've tested out over the last 6 months. I'm just really passionate about it. So the big brands like Boat, everyone's heard of. But there are a lot of brands I found, for example, on the marketplaces that I hadn't heard of before. I looked through reviews on Amazon. That's why I spend a lot of time. I actually, having worked at Amazon, have a lot of respect for that ecosystem. And there's a lot of learning even today that I actually take from there. And that's why I don't return, in a nutshell. That's the answer, because I do a lot of research up front. And then I find a D2C brand website and try to buy from there. And if it's not there, then I go and buy from an Amazon. And then I try to get that person on ShipRocket.
So don't return and do your research, customers, because the biggest bane of D2C brands or what keeps founders up at night is RTOs. Thanks so much to all of you for listening. Until the next episode, we'd love to hear back from you on feedback, questions, or anything else. I'm available as always on AB Vaidya on Instagram and on LinkedIn at Arjun Vaidya, and I'd love to chat. Also, don't forget to click the subscribe icon. If you like what you heard, please click the share button and share with family and friends. Thank you so much, Akshay, for being with us. It's an amazing conversation, a lot of learnings for everyone who listened.
Thank you, Arjun. Thank you so much for this opportunity, and have a great weekend.